There's nothing uglier than a lover scorned. They're digging. They're fishing for stuff. Sex, nudity, violence. That's a bunch of nonsense. And I think Tyler Johnson's a football player. You know what they had in common? They stink. They stink. Here we go. Another episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 2.5 weeks from training camp, and here he is. He is ready. He is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Pasco County. That is Ira Kaufman, Uncle Ira, the star of the Ira Kaufman podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks fan. Lee D. Kemper is here, and the sage, episode 2 this week. We are jacked up. We're going to be mean and lean in this episode, Ira, but we got a lot to talk about. How are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. I'll start right off with the word of the day, baby. And that word is outrage. Or more specifically, lack of outrage. The Kemper, what is going on in this world when all the national pundits have buried their computer keys? They've locked up their computers. The TV geeks, they have nothing to say. Stephen A., Max Kellerman, Golic. Where are these people? Dominique Foxworth, I'm calling all of you out. You got to kill DeSean Jackson. You got to destroy this man. But what do I hear, Lee? Crickets. Absolute crickets. And if that doesn't tell you where the hell we are as a nation, I don't know what does. I don't want to hear any excuses from DeSean Jackson about his 2 years in Tampa or his ridiculous Instagram posts. And by the way, he made $258,000 per catch as a Buccaneer. How do you like that, Lee? How do you like it?
You know, I knew DeSean Jackson wasn't exactly a Chamber of Commerce kind of guy, shall we say, and he kind of showed his rear end here. The lack of outrage doesn't really surprise me, although I think Max Kellerman did go off. But the little bit of quote-unquote outrage I've noticed, people like Robert Klemko, another an ESPN employee, said to him, why are you so quiet about DeSean Jackson? He gets all defensive. Well, how come you're quiet about Kaepernick? This isn't about Kaepernick. Kaepernick's got nothing to do with this. Jeff Schwartz, and he works for our NFL radio once in a while. He's like a, okay. He's like a kind of a fringe media guy. Someone called him up, and of course he's Jewish. They asked him, you know, what about the silence about DeSean Jackson? No outrage or anything? And he's like, I expected it. He basically said, I expected it. You know, and he explained
why. Well, I didn't like his answer because I think he also tried to say at the end, there's not a lot of Jewish players in the league. Steve, you got to be Jewish to be outraged about this? I ask you, Isbitz, where are the other players? Where the heck are they? All I hear is this clown Steven Jackson, I think the former basketball player, and he was trying to support DeSean Jackson. I mean, what's going on here, Isbitz? Hold on, let me say something about Robert Klemko, and I hope he's listening to the podcast. He wrote a story, you know, while he was working for Peter King's outfit. It was all about Hall of Fame voting and how the orator and the guy that makes presentation is too powerful, and he kind of used some of my stuff with the Warren Sapp presentation, and of course he misquoted me, and he never talked to me. So that's my story with Robert Klemko, and when I brought it up to Peter King, and somebody showed me the story on the morning of the meeting. It was the morning of the Hall of Fame meeting. It was a Saturday morning, and somebody said, have you seen this? And they showed it to me on the phone, and I said, I never talked to the guy. He's quoting me about my presentation with Zappy. He's got things wrong. The guy never called me. When I told King, King was pretty pissed off and said, I'll deal with Klemko, and he ended up apologizing to me. So that's so much for you, Robert Klemko.
Well, first of all, Ira, there's been a healthy share of outrage on Twitter. You just have to find it. I mean, Louis Riddick was very outspoken on this topic. But it's not as strong as you might like it to be, or a lot of people would think it would be. You know, just as we speak right here, I'm looking at NFL.com. I'm not seeing anything on it right now. I haven't really seen any in-depth features from them discussing the issues or whatever. But I think a lot of it, honestly, Ira, just stems from the time of year. Now, DeSean Jackson kind of lucked out because July 4th weekend to put out something like that right after July 4th We are talking the deadest of the dead time. Peter King's not out there opining. Albert Breer's on vacation. They got all the B-list people on NFL radio. I mean, it's just not, it's like the best time he could have done this for himself personally. And, but it did brings up a bigger subject, Ira, is forget what DeSean Jackson said for a minute, okay? Or what he put out there.
I would like to, Steve. I would like to, yeah.
It's a big decision if you decide to just get rid of or suspend a player for saying something stupid because he has beliefs that are, you know, way out of anything that's considered acceptable.
So, happened in baseball.
You know, I mean, it's a league-wide decision that would have to be made on something like that. You know, you wrote a column about DeSean Jackson and his comments, and, you know, you said in there that, you know, Riley Cooper, that was different because it was sort of like an excited utterance in the moment. I can't buy that, Ira. I mean, it's all bad is bad, and you just don't say or write certain things. I don't think writing something on Twitter is different than saying something. It's just a decision the league has to make, just like tomorrow. If the Dominican Sioux put out something that was totally totally out of line, should the Bucks cut him tomorrow? I don't know. Suppose it's Tristan Wirfs, and the player is a rookie, and maybe, you know, and people would feel worse about or feel better about a rookie and just think, oh, he just needs to be educated. He's young. He's stupid. But this is the same league and the same Buccaneers, for example, who didn't get rid of Jameis when he, got labeled as a sex offender by the NFL. So, I mean, you just have the league doesn't have clear lines for this stuff.
Lee, what Steve is hinting at without saying it is it depends who says it, right, Lee?
Yeah,
I mean, if it's Kevin Minter, you know, he's gone. Kevin Minter's out. He's out. If it's a backup, if it's Joe Haig, he's gone. But now you got DeSean Jackson. There's a salary cap implication, Lee, of about $5 million. I don't want to hear it from the Eagles. In my opinion, he represents the organization, and that is not somebody I want representing the organization. Simple as that.
I just found it interesting when Reese initially said he wasn't going to kneel. I thought the globe was going to come off its axis.
That was way overkill, way overkill.
All right, Sage, your podcast, it is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry Ford, that is just the place to get any kind of vehicle and service and body work in the Tampa Bay area. Family owned, 60 years. Owners are right there. Jennifer Curry, we've talked about her. General Manager Sean Sullivan is our good friend. He is there ready to give Joe Bucks fan, readers, Ira Kaufman listeners and readers, a specific discount just for mentioning the podcast or the website. Now, of course, Sean loves to talk Bucks with all fans at all times. You can email him. BillCurryFord.com is the place to start shopping. And still, Ira, $1,000 off any lease or any new vehicle, in addition to the 0% financing offers for 72 months that are out there now on new Fords. BillCurryFord.com. Nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. I could just talk all day long about Bill Curry Ford and the tremendous value and service and care that they give to everyone, including the three of us. We are all customers, not a bunch of hot air. We are Bill Curry customers.
Steve, when I was down there a few weeks ago getting my escape serviced, you know, I talked to Sean Sullivan and asked him how the dealership was doing, and he pointed me to the lot, and there wasn't a lot of cars out there. He says, we can't keep the cars on the lot. We're doing tremendous. It just goes, I think, directly to the kind of unprecedented deals that are being offered right now, and people should really take advantage of it because you don't know how long they're going to last, Steve.
Well said, Ira. Well said. All right, now listen, there's some excitement going on. You started with a DeSean Jackson. You're always trying to bring down this podcast, Ira. Always, always, never fails. Right out of the gate, Lee. The guy's dropping death and disease.
Hold on, let me wrap up the DeSean Jackson part of this podcast with the following. Lee, I was doing my research, a little deep dive into DeSean Jackson's brilliant two seasons at One Buck Place. I came across this stat. Lee, I wish I was joking. I wish I was making it up. I wish it wasn't true. He caught two touchdown passes. Two. From Jameis Winston. Two. 5 from Ryan Fitzpatrick, 2 in 2 seasons from Jameis Winston. I don't have anything to add to that, Lee.
Well, that's what happens when you run routes at different speeds, different angles in a game than you do in practice.
Well, some people take it a step further, Steve, and they suggest, for whatever reason, DeSean Jackson didn't lay out for Jameis Winston's long passes. I've never believed that. I thought that was crazy, but you never know what the heck was going on. He never had confidence in Jameis Winston, and I think ultimately vice versa.
And frankly, Ira, it goes to the Buccaneers had a horrible, horrible, horrible head coach who couldn't work that out. You had a problem between two marquee players, super talented players. There was an issue there. The coach couldn't freaking fix it. And that's on the coach. I'm sorry. It is on the coach. Well, DeSean Jackson, what other quarterbacks did he have issues catching balls from?
Yeah.
In his career?
Yeah.
I don't know of any.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it was like he didn't try. I remember Cutter talked about he brought those two in a room. It's like, you know, what do we have to do to get on the same page?
Well, that's the point. He failed. As we say on the website sometimes, you know, plumbers try real hard. You know, they should be running Bucks. They should be Bucks running backs because we're not going to pat Peyton Barber on the back for trying hard. Those guys failed big time. And if they couldn't work it out quickly, they should have gotten rid of Jackson and traded him for something. But they didn't do that.
Not only that, they shouldn't have brought the guy in the first place. I know it's it's rearview mirror logic. No one argued that that was a bad move when he was signed. Actually, Steve Dumick was one of the few, and Steve was a closet Eagles fan. Although he was Bucks through and through, he still held some allegiances to the Eagles. He hated DeSean Jackson. He had some dirt on Jackson as well. And I remember Dumick saying that this was not going to go good.
And Lee, thank God the Bucks had a guy like Godwin on the roster in 2018 to cushion the blow that second year when Jackson wasn't productive. It would have been a lot worse if they didn't have a Chris Godwin that year.
My favorite was when Dirk Cutter said DeSean Jackson had the green light to return punts. If he feels like it, he does it. What's going on?
That's a terrible line, Steve. That's a terrible line.
Yeah, and he said it with a straight face. And that was the deal. He just basically let DeSean Jackson do whatever he wanted. And he would never, we went over this. He always was soft on Jackson, made him the team captain for the game day captain when he was just, you know, full of nonsense. Cutter was just, he gets a big F for managing those relationships. All right, Sage, the NFL, this is a big, big step. The NFL and the union, they made an agreement. They reached an agreement on training camp. So now nobody has to worry about these guys actually showing up. They've got all the rules in place for coming to camp. They're going to have, I guess, apparently the social distancing 6 feet apart is actually going to happen in a big way, including the locker rooms, which is insane, and weight rooms, showers. I don't want to go in the shower route here, Ira, but... And all these meetings are going to be fully socially distanced. What do you think about this?
I wish them a lot of luck, and I hope it turns out to be practical guidelines. Lee, I think it means bringing 15 guys into a locker room at a time, something like that. I don't know what the heck. We've been in the visitor's locker room at Ray J. That place is like a closet. I don't know what they're going to do in that situation. The Buck locker room at the stadium is about 4 times larger. But, Steve, I hope that they can adhere to these protocols and the virus is contained as best it can be. Everybody wants to see a season. Joe Bucks fan wants to see a season. Our numbers are going through the roof. And justifiably, with all the excitement around one Buck place in the 2020 season, Lee, from the fans' perspective, they can't wait for that opener at the Superdome. They want to see their Bucks. They want to see Brady operating with the best targets he's had maybe in 13 years since that incredible record-breaking 07 Patriots team. And the excitement's through the roof. So, Lee, it's 200 pages of protocols, Lee. That's what it is. You know, it'll take you 6 hours to get through them. And, Lee, you know this. A lot of things sound good on paper. But when you put them into practice, it's unwieldy. I'm hoping that they can make adjustments along the way and give it a real try, Lee. I'm hoping for the best.
That's all we can do is hope for the best. Then what I would thought was interesting, you know, you brought up the locker room too, Ira, and it's very specific. Everybody's got to be social distancing. Everybody must. No ifs, ands, or buts. Must be 6 feet apart. And I'm thinking to myself, where are they going to pull this off with 75 guys?
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is they're going to have like a mass unit. They're going to have a locker room and showers outside for some players. We've been in there. There's no way that they have enough room in those locker rooms at $1 for 75 players with 6 feet apart. There's no way.
Right.
I know they can add lockers in there, but it wouldn't be 6 feet apart. You know, like you mentioned, they could go at the stadium. I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, I heard the Steelers are going to have their training camp at Heinz Field. But like you said, the visitor's locker room at Raymond James, yeah, it's like it's part of, almost like a casket. It's so small. And so somewhere they're going to have auxiliary lockers and auxiliary showers.
If this is the way it's got to be, Steve, if this is the way it's got to be, so be it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you can't argue with the protocols, and I think teams that don't follow it are going to face some severe penalties from a league standpoint.
Do they have lockers in the Glazer shed? I don't think so.
They haven't changed anything yet from what I've heard or seen, so it's still going to be 90 players for training camp.
Okay.
And I haven't seen any widespread cuts yet or any announcement that they're going to. So that makes it even more difficult. I agree they have to do something outside. One thing that came up, Ira, is your old pal Rick Stroud got Bruce Arians on the phone, and Arians told him two very interesting things. One, that they are going to spend a lot of time in the Glazer shed for meetings, and that Arians is going to be separated using a bullhorn or a microphone, and guys will be spread out in the bleachers. And, of course, they'll get some screens in there, and they'll have team meetings there, because otherwise, where are you going to have a team meeting? They just don't have the room for that. So that sort of, you know, takes away, I think, from some of the Bruce Arians in-your-face kind of, you know, folksy, you know, you can't. It's harder to bond when you're holding a microphone, you know.
I think that's a great point, Steve, about Arians in particular. And, look, we don't say this with any glee or any malice, because I'm right there with them, but he's in the endangered category, Lee. I mean, that's just a fact. He's got these comorbidities or whatever they're calling these things. And, you know, the first thing you look at is age. And same with me. You know, I'm over, I'm not 41 anymore, Lee. I go up and down U.S. 41, but I ain't 41. That's just the way it is. And, Lee, if we thought that Arians was detached last season, and I think all three of us thought he was, to a certain degree, Lee, I wouldn't be surprised if Bruce Arians spends the entire practice, if they're in the indoor facility, in the bleachers. He could be in the bleachers, and the players are on the field. I mean, Lee, would you be surprised if that happened?
Not at all. He'll be there with the binoculars monitoring everything. Yeah.
Like I said, I think if the Bucks are smart, and I expect this to happen, they'll have some sort of raised platform for him. Maybe even something motorized for him to get around that's just higher than everybody else. Arians maybe some sort of jacked
up. Maybe like that Bear Bryant tower or something. Yeah. That could work, Steve. That could work.
But
and you know him with Bear Bryant. He reveres Bear Bryant.
Yeah.
So you might as well use the tower.
But here's the key is, which we're never going to find out, is how scared is Bruce Arians, right? Because
I think he's scared.
Scared
to the point where he's not going to show up at $1 place. I'm not suggesting that, but he is apprehensive. His wife has to be apprehensive. That's human nature.
Yeah. Well, again, we don't know personally, because that would affect his day to day. If he's legitimately scared and he's not going to be walking around working the building and, you know, come on, if he's legitimately scared, that will affect how he coaches the team. And that's scary. And like you mentioned, his wife, he's told a few different reasons why he left football, but one of his stories, I don't know which one is true, is that his wife told him, you know, this is the end of the line. You know, your health isn't good. You're out. And I'm sure that she is not interested in him signing up to die coaching the Bucks when they've got everything they need in life. And she likes being in the remote Georgia wilderness. You know, yep. I don't know how this bodes here, but one thing he did say, Ira, and which leads me to believe he's not scared. And Lee, I want to hear what you think on this. He said, and this made national headlines, the players, they're going to all get sick, that's for sure. It's just a matter of how sick they get. That's a strong statement, man. That tells me that Arians is prepared for everyone to be sick.
That's kind of an outrageous statement, isn't it, Lee? I mean,
it's certainly gloom and doom.
I don't know if he meant it literally, Lee. I think he was trying to say that there's going to be some people that come down with it. If he had to say it again, I don't think he would include 75 or 90 players, Lee, in that kind of a umbrella statement. That's rough stuff, Lee.
You know, I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one. I'm not Dr. Fauci. But if you do rub up against someone, if that is a guaranteed, surefire, 100% way of contacting it, the virus, it's going to happen. It is impossible to play football with social distance. Impossible. As a matter of fact, it's going to be damn hard to practice. How are you going to run any kind of plays? Forget 11-on-11, which players don't want to do. How are you going to run any kind of offensive plays with social distancing? I mean, you're going to have offensive linemen with gaps six wide, really? 6 feet wide? Come on. Just practicing. Again, forget the 11-on-11. Just practicing.
You're right.
Unless it's all going to be cardio workouts, it's impossible.
Steve, it's got to have a major effect on the actual practice regimen of the Buccaneers and the 31 other teams. The kind of plays they design for August over at One Buck Place.
I don't think so. I think if they're approving practice and the labor union has signed off on, okay, we're going to do 11-on-11, then no, I don't think these coaches are going to hold back. I mean, in the building, but once they hit the field, I don't think much is going to change. I mean, it's almost unrealistic, like Lee was saying anyway. I mean,
you know,
if you're playing football, you're going to have to be all over, breathing, snorting, all over the guy that you're playing against.
You know, Lee, as Steve is saying that, which is a very interesting way to look at it, and I think I mentioned this to you last week, but if they don't try to minimize contact and they try to make it business as usual, if they do that, Maybe part of the reason behind it, and I'm not saying it's crazy, is let's get this out of the way in August and get the antigens of whatever in the players' bodies and let them quarantine for a week in August so they don't have to do it in November. There's a lot of ways to look at this, Lee.
The chickenpox party, like Boomer Esiason claimed, was going on at Clemson and Alabama. Well, first off, and I could be dead wrong, I mean, this virus, every other day I hear something different. I mean, I remember when it first started creeping up, oh, don't wear masks, masks don't do anything for you, forget about it. Next thing I know, you have to have a mask, you're going to kill somebody. I mean, it's just all this stuff is all over the map, and I just quit listening to it some time ago because I don't know what the hell to believe. I just try to be responsible and leave it at that. Ethically, that's kind of dicey, isn't it? Aren't you setting yourself up for one hell of a lawsuit by doing that? I mean, that's number one. But number two, is this virus, can you get it a second time? I've never gotten a clear answer.
I don't think there's a clear answer yet.
That might be, you might be getting guys sick for no purpose at all. Just last week, the Wall Street Journal had a story about people in their 20s and 30s. They've had this for months. They've yet to recover. You know, like one was a marathon runner. She could barely walk two or three blocks. She's out of breath. Her pulmonary's all messed up. Her lungs are all messed up. And these guys are 20 and 30 years old as well. So just because you catch it and you're young doesn't mean you're going to beat it in like a stomach flu or something. These guys make their living with a physical activity. And if all of a sudden they can't do that anymore, their career's shot. And for
that's,
what?
That's a strong point from Lee, Steve, in terms of we hear anecdotal evidence about residual effects. Residual, where all of a sudden, you know, it has inflicted some kind of permanent damage, maybe some scarring, you know, in the lungs or something. And that can't be discounted, Steve, just because you get out of the hospital or you never have to go into the hospital. You still could have a long-range effect from this, Steve.
Ira, what are you talking? What are you, Dr. Kaufman now? What the hell's going on here, Ira?
I'm listening to your Italian friend Fauci, who I still believe in. Even if people at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Can't wait to distance themselves from the guy. I still believe in science, Steve.
Ira, I've got a wart on my calf. What do you think?
That's too much information. I don't want to hear any more about it.
Come on, Ira. You realize, Ira, that, as you like to say, your quote, these are grown-ass men. If they decide to play, they decide to play. There's going to be, in the first week in August, there'll be thousands of high school football players across Florida getting ready, practicing and getting ready to go. And they won't be tested every other day. They won't be socially distanced in school. They'll be crammed into school buses. This is just reality, Ira. I mean, I'm not worried about the NFL players because they're making this decision on their own. Maybe that's just me.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Is that nothing from the sage there? How about that? All right. Dr. Kaufman. All right. Ira, I'm going to say to you this quote. Don't say it's not that bad, end quote. Don't say it's not that bad. What am I referring to? Who am I talking about?
Well, that's got to be Bruce Arians in the Buck running game.
No, what it is I'm referring to, Ira, is what people say when they've got a water damage in their house and they make a big mistake by saying it's not so bad, because it is, and it leads to mold. Or they have a little bit of mold and they, it's not so bad. Well, that leads to a lot of mold and a lot of problems. You got to call Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website, same name, floridaselite restoration.com. If you have water damage, but any kind of disaster, they will take care of you and get you through the insurance process, make sure everything gets done for you the way you want it done, not the way somebody else does. Fire, flood, Florida's Elite Restoration. Josh Martin, Ira, your buddy at Florida's Elite Restoration. He was an insurance adjuster for 14 years. He's got 20 years in the industry. They're honest. If you have any water damage, call them. Before you call your insurance company, they will respond immediately, and they'll get out there 24/7. State-of-the-art equipment, mold remediation specialists. They're licensed and insured for that. They're not just another company. FloridasEliteRestoration.com.
Steve, you are absolutely right about mold. It is one of the issues that you cannot let fester. Otherwise, you're turning, what could be a relatively minor problem into a major repair job. You got to get on top of it in a hurry.
I think that's why Cosmo's barking. He might be one of these mold-sniffing dogs, and you got to get that straightened out, Ira. Ira, with the NFL season finalizing here, getting ready to go, the players coming in, we are so excited to have you out at Big Storm Brewery in Clearwater, just south of Almerton Road on 49th Street. Their huge outdoor covered area to watch football, brand new, is where the Sage is going to be hanging out almost all season long, which is very exciting. Outdoors, lots of distancing. The Wi-Fi setup is going to be with quite a booster out there if you want to hang out all day and drink the best craft beer in Florida, and the Sage will be there for a lot of Bucks games. Very excited.
I'm looking forward to, maybe not pressing the flesh, Steve, but meeting and enjoying the company of Buck Nation while we cheer on the 2020 Buccaneers.
In the meantime, get yourself a Bromosa, the fantastic new core beer from Big Storm Brewery, Tangerine IPA. Their classic is the Wavemaker Amber Ale. They've got the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, and so many specialty beers. Get to BigStormBrewery.com, and of course you can find where to buy it through their Storm Tracker, which is also at JoeBucksFan.com. And pretty cool, Ira. You know, Big Storm, they bought a giant restaurant inside the Orlando Magic Arena right there downtown.
It's at Amway Arena. I just read that.
Yeah, I talked to them about that. It's going to be open all the time. It's going to have access from the outside, so you can just pull up and park, and it's going to be just a massive sports-themed brewery, and I believe they're going to be brewing beer right there, and their killer menu will be going. You know, just something that's going to be packed on game days and event days. But it'll be there all the time, and we're hoping to have some watch events out there once they get rolling. They're redoing it right now. Hopefully they'll be open by November or so.
I believe, Steve, that's their fourth location. I think they got one in Cape Coral, Steve?
Yes.
Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, down in Cape Coral. This thing's a monster, though, an absolute monster right in Amway Arena. Now, Lee talked to Ali Marpet this week. Lee, you could give us any feel for that conversation if people didn't read it. It's at JoeBucksFan.com, of course. And one big highlight I thought in there, Lee, and I'm sure there's some stuff you didn't include, but one big highlight was Marpet really saying, Ira, that he trusts the NFLPA and he knows that their medical teams and whatever would not put the players at risk. So if they're approved to go back, they're sort of all in, and it's all good with them because they're so such a great overseer for the players.
I'm glad to hear that kind of attitude, Steve. We don't need Marpet or any other Buck players arriving at camp in a couple of weeks with all kinds of trepidation. That would have an effect on how they approach their jobs. We don't need that.
Most Pat Parents already done that, hasn't he?
I'm glad that Marpet's got that kind of confidence in the union, that they're looking out for their best interests. And until he sees otherwise, he's going to support them. I think that's a positive going forward, Lee.
The big thing I got out of Marpet, you want to call it big, you know, I asked him, I said, you know, hey, you got a quarterback, you've never had a formal practice with him yet, you're going to have a right tackle, you've never had a formal practice with him yet. Yeah, I said, if you guys get rid of 11-on-11 drills, yeah. And by the way, Marpet emphasized, if that happens, it would just be for this year. If you got rid of 11-on-11 drills and preseason games, aren't you guys going to be really, really, really rusty? I mean, again, you've never had a practice, or a legitimate practice or a scrimmage with your quarterback, with your right tackle. Isn't that going to hurt you guys? And he said, hey, if everybody else is under the same situation, if everybody else doesn't have 11-on-11s, if everybody else doesn't have preseason games, then I think as long as we're on the same page, I think we'll be okay.
Well, it's understood, Lee, that this affects all 32 teams. Some have more continuity than others. Of course, Grady's the big addition. And Wirfs is going to, you know, start, we think, at right tackle week one. But, Steve, on the other hand, they got four or five starters returning from up front. That's not bad. You know, that's an 80% retention rate. So that's the first thing you look at always when you're doing a college preview. You know, how many guys did you lose and how many guys are coming, how many starters are coming back? And, you know, I don't have a lot of qualms about Brady and how long it's going to take him to pick things up. Steve, I've said it from the front, from the day they signed Brady. You're talking about a different cat, Steve, and people are worried, oh, he's got to pick this up and he's going to put new things into the playbook and how's he going to absorb tendencies from Leftwich. And that's all made up nonsense. This is Tom Brady. There's never been anybody like him in Tampa Bay. Probably never been anybody like him in the 100-year history of this freaking league. Let's stop worrying about whether there's too much on Tom Brady's plate.
Lee, anything else from Marpet you want to chime in on?
No, nothing really enlightening, just about everything he said I put in the story.
Did he say he reads Joe Buck's fan, Lee? Did he?
They may say they don't. I'm not saying how he said that. They may say they don't, but they do. Because I hear about it, and Steve hears about it. Real quick, Ira, you were talking about, and you were glad to hear Marpet's attitude of the NFLPA's medical people are okay, then he's, you know, fully supported and ready to go, and it's a good thing no other Buck player is kvetching about this. Actually, there is a Bucks player kvetching about it, or at least has reservations. Shaq Barrett was on NFL radio recently, and you know how radio announcers are, hey, you're counting down days to training camp. And Shaq Barrett said, no, I'm not counting down the days. I got to go to Florida for training camp, and that state's going crazy with the virus.
You know, at the same time, Lee, Shaq Barrett's in line for his first big paycheck by NFL standards. I mean, not by, you know, our readers or the three of our standards, but by NFL standards. he's going to get paid this year. Let's not broach any nonsense that he might sit the season out. Steve, ain't going to happen. He's got to be tremendously motivated among all the Bucks. He's, I think, in the top tier in terms of motivation because he's trying to prove he wasn't a one-year wonder. I don't think he was. Now, that doesn't mean I think he's going to get 19 and a half sacks, but he's looking for a big-time extension, 4 years and, you know, $67 million. And he ain't getting that if he has a bad season. So I'm not too worried about Shaq Barrett's motivations, Steve.
All right, Sage. Now, the NFL, big thing, and probably by the time people are listening to this podcast, the NFL will have come out with a decision, and it's expected that there's going to be an opt-out option where players, just like in baseball and other sports, but the NBA, can opt out and skip the season. Do you see any candidates on this Bucks roster? Now, we don't know anybody's fears and maybe they, you know, or family situation or anything like that. I'll give one hypothetical. You know, Ndamukong Suh just got married. You know, maybe for all we know, his wife's got diabetes. And he, you know, doesn't have any interest in playing if he can opt out. I don't know.
Steve, give me some more details about this opt out. You mean
the opt out?
You mean they would still be contractually bound to the team? They're not gonna be paid if they don't play football, Steve.
No, they're not gonna be paid. But it's the simple way to say it is a player can say, "I'm skipping this year, and that's it. I won't get paid. I'll go on some sort of reserve list, and it won't count as credit for a year served. So if I have 1 year left with my Bucks contract, then
right.
If I opt out, the Bucks will have me under contract for 2021, and it'll be as if nothing happened. I just vanished for a year. But you can't opt out and then opt back in.
Among all the clauses and sub-clauses to that situation, one clause stands above all others. You ain't getting paid, DeKemper. You ain't getting paid. Enough said. That doesn't mean there won't be any NFL players that opt out, but it's not going to be a rush, you know, towards the gates. And as far as the Bucks are concerned, Lee, a player that might opt out, well, for anybody who thinks it's going to be Tom Brady, they're nuts. It ain't. Tom Brady's looking forward to this season maybe more than, with rare exception, any in his 20-year career. He says football's fun again. So it's all about Brady. And as far as COVID-19, I think Brady's already proven, Lee, with his appearances at Berkeley Prep, how committed he is, how dedicated he is. He's not going around worried about COVID-19. He ain't opting out. And, Lee, if he ain't opting out, I don't see many Bucks opting out.
Well, Ira, since you bailed out on my hypothetical, is there any Buccaneer you would like to opt out? Anybody you don't want to see play this year because you're sick of them? You want a new? You want Steven Gostkowski in here? What do you want?
I might open the door if Matt Gay wanted to walk out. I might open the door for him. Look, he didn't have a terrible rookie season, but he had some terrible moments. I'm not convinced that he's the guy. I'll say it again. I said this in August, and I'm going to say it again almost a year later. I got more confidence on him making a 52-yarder than a 36-yarder, and I don't like that. And until he proves me wrong, Lee, I don't like that situation. I want strong competition for Mr. Gay, and I don't care if he's a draft pick or not a draft pick. I want him looking over his shoulder and totally focused, and if somebody outkicks him in camp, Lee, I'm giving that guy the job. So he's the first name on my list, Matt Gay.
I would have to say Dari.
And as soon as I said Matt Gay, Cosmo's barking in the other room. As soon as I
Cosmo's
said Matt
upset
Gay.
Too, huh?
It's unbelievable. Listen to him. What the heck's he barking about? Does he see a picture of Peter King in the other room? What's going on over there?
So Lee,
are you suggesting you have pictures of Peter King?
Well, Steve told me he's got photoshops of Peter King on a horse. Oh my goodness.
Well, they're not Photoshop.
They're real.
Got them.
But now we know you've got pictures of Peter King in your house. You're never going to live that down.
Now I'm outside the front of the house. I got a bird pooping on me. I mean, I can't win over here, gentlemen. So who said Dari? Was that you, Lee?
Yeah.
And as soon as you said Dari, I got the bird shrieking in my, what is this, an Alfred Hitchcock movie, gentlemen?
He's not the only thing that Dari makes shriek.
So, Lee, you're not even okay with him as the... sort of the third running back, you think they
no, not now. Yeah. I'm going to butcher the guy's name, so I'm not going to even try. But arguably one of the better running backs for San Francisco is demanding a trade. Mostert, does that sound
Mostert,
right?
Mostert.
And, you know, he's nothing to write home about, but I've been saying for months that this offseason the Bucs not only needed to draft a running back, which they did, I was hoping it to be somebody else, but so
right.
Such is life with the Bucs.
Right.
And they needed to bring a veteran in, both a rookie and a veteran. I have zero confidence in Ronald Jones. I hope the guy runs through 2,000 yards. I just do not. I mean, I'm not a hope guy. I'm just not a hope guy. People with the Bucks, they're hope people of that building. They hope this, they hope that, you know. Bobby Knight had the greatest word line about hope. Hope is the worst four-letter word in the English language. I can't argue with that.
Lee, that goes right with the, you know what potential means? It means you ain't done it yet. See, that's a good line, too. Yeah.
So, you know, I would love to see somehow. Of course, most wants money. The Bucks don't have a lot of money with the cap. I get that. I understand it. Most positive element I could say about the Bucks running backs, my vision of them, show me. I'm in a show me mode. Show me.
You know,
until you show me, they're pretty lousy.
Speaking of Mostert, you know, in trying to evaluate the guy, I just think that San Francisco, their running game in general, Steve, was so powerful, and the coach was so committed to establishing a solid running game that, you know, they kind of drafted receivers like the number two thing on the receiver list is the guy better be able to block. Kittle's a very good blocker. The receivers block. And so as far as the individual runners, you know, they had Tevin Coleman. They had Mostert, Breida, right, Steve? And they were all very productive. So when that happens, you know, you kind of wonder if it's the system or the back. I think it makes it a little murky to evaluate the guy.
You got a good point there, Ira, because Shanahan always has a good running game. And his dad always had a good running game. They know how to get the most out of their running backs. That's a very good point, because look what happened when Shanahan left Atlanta. Freeman really hasn't been much since
That's
he left.
Right.
Now,
That's
you
right.
could say, he could say it's Dirk Cutter. Dirk Cutter rarely has had a running game until he was forced to have one. And when Lovie Smith said, you're going to have a running game, well, he didn't have any choice then. But whenever Cutter had power to run an offense without anybody breathing over his back, he's had lousy run games.
That's a great point. Now, I guess he had a couple of good ones in Jacksonville, but that's a long time ago.
Del Rio didn't give him much of a choice.
Well, Sage Jackson.
He had a really good running back. Maurice Jones-Drew was a good running back, too.
And Fred Taylor.
Yeah, that's right, Freddie Taylor.
All right, Sage, just to throw it in there, Rex Burkhead, who we have talked about before, he restructured his contract with the Patriots, so it's pretty obvious he is going nowhere. And let me mention this, Ira, because, well, you know, next time we'll get into your tennis playing days with Gay Culverhouse. Well, we'll get into that on the next podcast.
By the way, Steve, one more thing about the running back situation. I'm not sure it's set in stone, Steve. In fact, I don't think it is, unless the Bucks are very pleasantly surprised at the progress of Vaughn and, you know, continued improvement by Jones. Maybe Calais shows something. But, Steve, barring any big revelations there in the current backfield, don't think for a second that there's not going to be a veteran shook loose late in training camp. Happens all the time. If the Bucks can financially make sense of a deal, I would not be surprised if they added a veteran back, Steve.
There's a lot to this, Ira, and so much of it, which we don't talk about, is these coaches need to see Tristan Wirfs in the flesh and see if he's not a bust. And now, I don't think he's a bust. I have no reason to believe he's a bust. But you know what? Offensive linemen get drafted in the first round and suck. It happens. And if this guy's a monster, they're going to have a pretty good running game. If he really is the real deal, because it'll be such a difference from DeMar Dotson, and you got Gronkowski blocking next to him. They're going to have a stepped up running game, but these coaches got to see Wirfs. And a lot of the offenses, I believe, is going to be tailored around how good is this guy? Because if he's not that good, we got to change everything. The thought of Ogunbowale getting 100 targets this year has me a little sick, but, you know, we'll see.
So let's not let that pass. Your concern about Wirfs, I think you'd agree with me, is...
No, I'm not concerned. They got to see him.
Much more focused on the pass blocking aspect than the run blocking. If you're a damn good run blocker, which he has shown consistently in college, you can make that adaption to the NFL game. But even the scouting reports on Wirfs, even the best ones, said, you know, he's got to have to improve against the speed rushers. They all said that. This is not any kind of great secret. And, Lee, no OTAs, and who knows what the heck's going on in training camp, and the next thing you know, you're in the Superdome where you can't hear anything.
Lee, that's a potential problem.
Yeah, now with worse, the scouting reports I heard, they didn't know if he was bad or needed work with speed rushers, just he never faced any.
Yeah.
They didn't play Ohio State, so he didn't face Chase Young. And
right.
So he really never faced anybody, so it's kind of a mystery. Can he do, you know, they think he can because he's such a good athlete, but there's no evidence, there's no empirical evidence, there's nothing on film that demonstrates he can take care of speed rushers. So, you know, learning right off the bat with an NFL speed rusher, it's going to be interesting. I'm like Steve. You know, there's nothing to suggest this guy's a bust. I'm not even saying he's, you know, but we don't know. And there are offensive linemen that are drafted early. It happens that don't pan out. So, you know, everything's a mystery with him. We just don't know. This weird, weird year.
Yeah, Sage, I'm not concerned about Wirfs, but the coaching staff has to see him. And frankly, Mr. Arians drafted a bust of an offensive lineman that took 4 years for his ability to come out, and
right.
Then he got a new contract. But he was an instant bust, and one reason that Arians was against drafting linemen until this year.
Steve, at least they got a veteran like Haig, and if they have to.
Yeah.
Through injury or ineffectiveness, I don't think he'll embarrass himself at right tackle.
Well,
do you think Wirfs is already penciled with this weird year? You know, just what we were talking about, there's been no practices, there's been no OTAs, no mini camps, none of that, not even a rookie mini camp. Do you think it's a lock? He's starting?
If he's not starting in New Orleans, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Well, now, a normal year, I would fully agree with you. This is anything but a normal year. You know, what we were just talking about, you know, there's so much unknown about him. Do you throw this guy to the wolves, or do you play it safe and have Haig go out there and start and maybe Wirfs spots him a few series?
Well, you know who's going to weigh in on this besides Mr. Arians and the O-line coach and Mr. Leftwich is...
Mr. Glazer?
Mr. Brady. Mr. Brady, because when Brady is looking at the films of the preseason and the tapes of practice, he might have a couple of things to say about the Bucs' right tackle, and that could go a long way because, you know, he's a big voice in the room, Steve, no question.
Well, some of this and all the stuff we talked about, some of this is going to come back to Arians and his sports science team. You know how... what a big devotee he is of that. He's got his sports science guys in. He kicked out the analytics guys, and they're taking urine samples and stretching everybody out and using GPS to track movements. And, you know, hopefully Wirfs will adapt very quickly and stay healthy. If they're worried about him pulling a hamstring or a calf in week 3 because he's not in the shape they want him to be in, or in the third quarter of opening day, you might see some of what Lee's talking about with splitting some time early. And one thing I wanted to mention, Ira, since some teams have already announced, I'm not worried about noise in the Superdome, and I was going to write about this for Joe Bucks fan because it's obvious that stadiums are going to be 80% empty. You've got multiple teams now saying we're going to allow 15,000 in, 17,000. That's going to be the way, and I think that helps the Bucks.
You know what? That's a great point, Steve. And, you know, it could diminish home field advantage throughout the league. I mean, it could. The numbers, by the way, and they do surveys of this thing. I think home teams win about maybe 54-55% of the time. It's not 65. So it's not as open and shut as some people think. Oh, we're going on the road. We ain't going to win that game. And, of course, the Bucks have had more success on the road than home, and that's a whole nother podcast, gentlemen, but you're right, Steve. We're talking about, what, 20% capacity, 14,000 fans in Baltimore or whatever. The Superdome, that's as loud as it gets, guys. We've been there many times, right? That's rough stuff, especially in the fourth quarter when the Saints got the lead and the other team's got the ball. That crowd noise is a problem. And if there's going to be 13,000 Saints fans, you know, instead of 64, I like my chances a lot better in that building.
All right, Sage, let's get over to something that I pulled up out of New England. You know, a lot of columnists there, they love Brady, but they're starting to turn on him in a sense that they love pointing out that he's not all that anymore. You know, they're sort of, they don't want to trash him, but they're sort of saying, this guy, now we got Cam Newton and all this stuff. So there's a fantastic writer. I've gotten to know this guy via his writing, and his name's Ken Laird. He used to work for a Pittsburgh newspaper, and now he's up in Boston at their sports radio station, writes for their website. And he wrote a column, 12 Reasons Why Cam Newton Will Be Better Than Tom Brady. Very well done. A lot of fun. And he basically in there touches on how Brady just was unwilling, according to this guy, to work with young receivers. And even when they drafted one in the first round, Brady wasn't very patient. And that's why he was always pushing, get me Josh Gordon back, get me Antonio Brown. And in one of these other points the guy made was that, hey, Brady always wanted to be the GM, he was frustrated that he really had no roster input in New England. What do you make of this? I don't think I read that, and I was thinking, man, Tyler Johnson, he might just have to wait a year if Brady is not going to have any patience for a young receiver. I don't know, Ira. What do you think of that?
I'm not buying it for a minute, Isbeth. There's nothing uglier than a lover scorned. Nothing uglier than that. These New England people, they took a shot across the bow. You know, Tommy Boy is in Tampa, and he's not in Foxborough. And my advice is get over it, Lee. Get over it. And they're digging. They're fishing for stuff. No, I don't think Cam Newton's going to have a better season than Tom Brady. First of all, Tom Brady doesn't have any physical issues. Cam Newton, the last time I saw, he couldn't throw a ball more than 14 yards. And I can. So we got that. The last time I looked at Cam Newton, he didn't run anymore. That was half of his appeal, half of his effectiveness. Now, to Steve's point about these young receivers, I don't know Ken Laird. He might be a Pulitzer Prize winner in 2020. But I'll say this. I believe he gave a litany of these young receivers. Lee, you know what they had in common? They stink. They stink. None of them are any good. Did he have trouble with Edelman? You know, I'm talking about guys that you never heard of. Once they left New England. I mean, Brady knows what a football player looks like. And I think Tyler Johnson's a football player. I'm going to give Tyler Johnson the benefit of the doubt. I love his production in college. We know Brady can get him the ball if he's dependable. And if he's dependable, like I think Cam Brate is going to revive his career under Brady, because he's dependable. And if Tyler Johnson has the hands and makes catches in traffic, like the Bucs think he will, he's going to do well. Now, look, Tyler Johnson's not going to catch 87 footballs. Nobody thinks that. And the Bucs don't need him to. They just need him to be reliable, move the chains. You know, Brady, Evans and Godwin are the studs. Everybody knows that. And by the way, they're the best tandem studs in the league, hands down. I don't think anybody's close, really. And I don't know which one's better. That's how good Godwin is. I don't know if Evans is better than him. I think he is, but it's close. So, Lee, this nonsense about Brady and Tyler Johnson, it could impact Johnson's development. He might have to wait till Brady leaves town to show his wares. That's a bunch of nonsense, Lee. Tyler Johnson has to show that he's got it. And if Tyler Johnson shows it, he's going to thrive, Mr. DeKemper.
If you think about it, the Bucs could have 5 new starters on offense. Could. I'm not saying they will, but they could. Brady, of course. Gronkowski.
Yep.
Wirfs. Keyshawn Vaughn. And Tyler Johnson.
Yeah.
Could. I'm not saying they will, but could.
So, Steve, this thing about this, you know, litany of young receivers that Brady stunted their development. I mean, who are we talking about, Steve? Who?
All right, Sage, I hear you. America heard you loud and clear, Sage.
America heard Ira just like they heard South Dakota's governor, or more importantly, saw South Dakota's governor. Ira, I'm sure you watched that the other night.
I don't miss a thing, DeKemper. I don't miss a thing. By the way, we just finished season 3 of Ozark. We are caught up. They've just been renewed for a season 4, which, is probably 6 months or a year down the line. It was one hell of a series. You know, they put before every episode, they put this little graphic up about what to expect. It was the same graphic sex, nudity, violence. I just turned to my wife and said, "Here we go, another episode." And
I've got a.
And meanwhile, while I'm watching this violence-laden Ozark, Izvitz is over there with the family, with Disney Plus, and he's watching, and he's watching Hamilton, right, Steve? Hamilton.
Ira, I don't watch television, Ira. Come on.
Here's one for you, Ira. I got hooked on Yellowstone. I've been binge watching it.
How is that, Lee? How is
that? That's really good. That's really good.
How can I see season one? How?
In a week, Peacock Network online launches. It's online, Peacock Network, and it is free originally. So you could catch it. I think there's some season one you can find online somewhere, but it premieres online, so to speak, on the Peacock Network, July 15th, for free. See, that's how you get to watch it. So I'll say this, Ira, and I'm not giving anything away, but if you watch it, and there are some episodes that are slow, if you stick with it, you'll get hooked, because, and especially season two, the first episode or two of season two, it's like, eh, and season three, it hits the ground running. It's fantastic. But there's one element in season three, Return to Sender. When you see that, Vito Corleone somewhere is tipping his hat in appreciation. Return to Sender. Just remember that. Return to Sender.
The only thing I know about Return to Sender is it was the number one hit for Elvis. That's the only thing I know. I'll start watching it.
All right, Iris, send Bucks fans out into the promised land here with a wise message.
With all the passion we can muster, the three of us, we are sending this out to Buck Nation. Somehow, some way, we are hoping that this league can open on time and finish with the Super Bowl in Tampa. Whether the Bucks are in the game or not, the Super Bowl is scheduled for Tampa, early February, and we have a fervent desire and wish that this NFL season is played, the Bucks do well, and the players and coaches and fans are healthy throughout. So we got to send the good vibes out, Steve.